Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Athena Zone. I'm Janet Boyer, and I'm so happy to be with you today. My beloved co-host, Laura Brown, is out sick this week. Poor her. She has been really sick with a bad cold and coughing, and she even has to see the doctor for her throat. She's not even allowed to speak. So I am manning the dashboard and doing the hosting and the interviewing, and so send her some healing energy and good vibes. And Laura, we miss you, and we hope you feel better soon. This Thursday, the psychic twins, my pals, yes, the world-famous psychic twins, Terry and Linda Jameson, will be joining me as we talk about the death of JonBenet Ramsey. Recently, they did a channeling on YouTube. They channeled JonBenet Ramsey, and she pointed who her real killer was, and it just sent chills up my spine. It was a real shocker. And so the twins are going to join us and talk about this case and the conspiracy behind it. It does involve the Illuminati. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but, hey, things like this happen. So they're going to share that with us and talk about their meteoric rise on YouTube. They just launched in January, and they are already the fastest-growing YouTube channel with scads of listeners. So they're going to be joining us Thursday at 3 p.m. I think my co-host is still going to be out then, so I'm probably going to be running solo Thursday as well. But today, I'm very excited to have Natalie Zaman with us. It is so cool when you know somebody online and then you finally get to talk with them and hear their voice. It's always such an exciting moment for me, and so I got to chat with Natalie a few minutes before the show. And today, Natalie is going to talk about her new book, Magical Destinations of the Northeast, Sacred Sites, Occult Oddities, and Magical Monuments. And this is Northeastern United States, so we're talking the states of Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, D.C., Maryland, Delaware, my home state of Pennsylvania, woohoo, New Jersey, and New York. For those of you who are not familiar with Natalie, she is the co-author of the Graven Images Oracle Deck. She is also co-author of the young adult novel Sirens and Sirens Back in Fashion and Blonde Ops. Her work has appeared various Llewellyn annuals as well as Fate, Sage Woman, and New Witch Magazine. Currently, she writes the Wandering Witch feature on Witches and Pagans magazine. For more information on Natalie, including interview special appearances and her book signings, which I'm sure that they are many right now, visit nataliezaman.com, NataliezaMan.com. And she even has a website called Broomsticks, that ends in an X, which is her online collection of craft stories, ritual, and art for pagan families and kiddos. How cool is that? So without further ado, I introduce to you Natalie Zaman.
Hi. Kermit Flail.
I wish I had like cheers or something, like sound effects to push and there'd be screams and stuff, but we'll just have to use our magical abilities and imagine the cheers and the confetti,
yes,
and everything.
And Kermit Flails. I love,
yeah,
him.
So it's funny, you have an article, or actually a column called Wandering Witch. Is that because you are a big traveler?
I wish I could travel more than I've done, but I try to get around as much as I can. The Wandering Witch was something that I had come up with. Like, I guess you're talking about the magazine, yeah? That's the article for, yeah. For now, it's Witches and Pagans. It used to be in New Witch magazine when that one was still extant, right?
Right.
And I had this idea for talking about magical communities and kind of bringing attention to them so that folks knew where they were. And that's how it kind of started. And I pitched the idea to Ann Niven over at BBI Media. And they're the ones that published The Sage Woman. And I believe it's, now it's Witches and Pagans and Crone.
Yes. Shout out to Ann Niven. Love her.
Yes, love Ann Niven. You know,
I write
awesome
for her. I do some reviews for her, and I have a Pagan Square blog on sacred symbols. And isn't she just wonderful? Doesn't she do so much for the pagan community?
Oh, she does. She's one of the most fabulous people that's out there. And
she's like an unsung hero. I mean, the stuff that she does and pulls off is just heroic.
Oh, yeah, incredible. Absolutely incredible. I mean, really, I would say that there wouldn't be this book without her. there's no way. I mean, she pretty much gave me my break, because that's when I started writing, you know, just not even just the travel pieces, but that was my first kind of foray into writing any kind of New Age topics at all.
Oh, really?
Yes, was in it. My first article was Everyone's a Psychic, because I'm not. I know exactly.
Heck,
right?
With writing what you know, right?
Well, here's the thing. I have this thing where, like, the running joke among my friends is we'll go places or different places, anywhere, and it, like, someplace will be haunted. And I will see absolutely nothing. Everybody will be like, the people will be getting their hair tugged, and they'll be getting poked, and they'll feel freezing. And I'm like, okay, what, really? What's going on here? It's completely side dead. It's terrible. But you know, it is something that I think everybody does have the ability to do. And it's just a matter of being open to it and exercising it. To quote Monty Farber, who's another wonderful person.
Another friend of ours. Hi, Monty.
Yes, Monty's awesome. What is it? It's either exercise your psychic muscle or flex your psychic muscle. It's one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quoting him loosely on that, but it's true. It's like if you don't use it, you lose it. You know,
right?
And slowly but surely, it was just like basically how I went from being like completely kind of closed off to it to opening up to that ability. And of course, there are people that are very open to have and have amazing gifts and whatnot, but everybody has it inside them. So that was my first article, and gave me my start. So yeah, she's an amazing person. Big shout out to
her. Did you train yourself?
Her.
Did you, not to interrupt, but I'm fascinated, if we can go back a minute. Did you train yourself to become more intuitive then?
Different things happened. And it's funny how, like, you know, circumstances in your life will give you the opportunity. And for me, my dad had left the home when I was about 10 years old, and aww, we reconnected. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's these things happen in life, you know, it's one of those, you know, but when I was in my 30s, we reconnected, and he was ill. So it was right before he passed. And when that happened, I was really confused. I was like, do I want to kind of open myself up again to this? Because in a way, it was like he had already gone. So it was like talking to the dead in a way. And I really also didn't know too much about his side of the family. And he had a sister who also contacted me. And, you know, she had, she had told me a few stories about like aunts and uncles and his side that I really didn't know. So it was, but it was a confusing time, and I really wasn't sure what was going to happen with that. And it was, you know, kind of in the front of my mind when one night I guess you know, like when you go to sleep and you wake up and it's nighttime and you're awake but you're not quite awake yet. It's like that kind of moment, right? So I kind of wake up and I open my eyes, and standing right next to me is this figure. Okay, there's no other way to describe it. It was a person, and I remembered it so well that I was able to kind of sketch it in my journal. Like, the person was wearing, it was a woman. She had a very distinct hat. She had a very distinct coat. It was like a 1920s style, just outfit or whatever that she had on. And I sketched it in my journal, and I was like, I didn't think too much about it until about a month later, when Aunt Barbara sent me a bunch of family pictures. And when I went through it, there was the person that was standing at the foot of my bed in a picture.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And it was just like, okay, you know, and one of the things that was very, that came to me right away was I wasn't trying to see anything. I wasn't, you know, but I must have been open to it, because I was thinking about that side of the family. Should I get involved? And I took it as a sign that, yeah, they kind of wanted me to stick around and figure things out. So, I mean, that was something that, and it's been trial and error since then. I would say I'm still, you know, kind of you know, stuffed with fluff when it comes to that, but definitely a little bit more intuitive than I was years ago. For me, it was circumstance.
When your aunt appeared, did she appear solid like a person, or was she see-through, or?
It was like a chalk outline, but it was very misty and white.
Yeah.
I remember just white, you know.
Wow.
And I wouldn't say that it was like the room was misty, but that she was kind of misty, dusty,
right,
that kind of thing. So.
So sometimes maybe it's a matter of timing too, and our openness.
Yeah, and
when
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, when I hear sometimes tarot readers, like I heard there was this tarot conference and they took a poll and most of them felt like they weren't psychic. And that blew my mind. See, I was born that way. I was able to see spirits and hear voices and things, not the crazy kind, ever since I was a toddler. So I thought, you know, everybody had that. And so I figured that once I entered into tarot, I figured that most people must be psychic then. And I was really shocked to realize that they say, no, they just, quote, read the cards. And what are your thoughts on that? I've always found that fascinating. I mean, I don't know how to divorce it from myself, so I don't understand, I guess, how somebody reads tarot and has no intuitive or psychic impressions about it.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, just the idea of reading, you know,
mm-hmm.
you're bringing
right.
something to the table.
Sure.
Because you're bringing your own world experience of the, you know, whatever that may be, and then whatever those images come up.
Right.
I think even Pamela Coleman Smith said that. It was like she, you know, she had, she Arthur Edward Waite or Edward Arthur?
Yes.
I keep messing that up.
Arthur Edward, I think.
There
yeah,
you go.
Right that way, but yes, that's it.
Okay, so between the two of them, I mean, they had designed these cards, and I'm guessing with like obvious meanings in mind because there was that little white book. But on Mary Greer's tarot blog, I think that's where I had read it, was that one of the things that Pamela Coleman Smith said when she was teaching people how to read the cards was that look at the picture and what does it tell you, and it
right.
might tell you something different than it tells me. And even the person being read, if they're not, you know, if they feel that they don't have any kind of psychic ability, they're going to look at an image and think something.
Right.
You know.
Fact that you're playing with symbols and archetypes and, like you said, your own worldview, that in itself opens up intuitive hits, unless people are just discounting their psychic abilities. I mean, I just always
it could be.
That was
wild. Yeah, I mean, and also I wonder too if it's like when someone, you know, they might feel like, okay, if I call myself a psychic, then I'm going to have to deliver all the time.
Could be.
And yeah, I mean that might enter into it too. But my experience with folks who are, you know, who have quite a lot of psychic ability or they're very in tune. Just because you call to someone on the other side doesn't mean they're going to answer either.
Right.
So, I mean, that, you know, it's you know, just like calling someone on the phone here, you know, if they're not one. Exactly. I'm busy right now. So.
Yeah, good luck. Ain't going to be getting a hold of me. I can guarantee that. I ignore the phone.
Oh, true.
I'm such a hermit. I'm like, good, let the answer machine pick it up.
You
so
know,
we should talk
little...
about your book. I'm sorry, you're just so fascinating, and I'm just rambling when we really should be talking about your new book, Magical Destinations of the Northeast. I was particularly excited about the Pennsylvania chapter, of course, because I'm from Southwest Pennsylvania. And when I originally heard the book, I'll be honest, I had hardly any interest in it, but only because I'm not a traveler. I am not well-traveled. I've stayed in my little in Pennsylvania my whole life. I have been in Orlando twice, maybe Delaware. I was at Niagara Falls once. I haven't even been west of Ohio. So I figured, well, gee, this is going to be kind of like for people who are really into travel, and, you know, and so it's probably not for me. But then I started reading it, and I found it so engrossing, not even about Pennsylvania, which a lot of the stuff I didn't know, but the other states, it made me have a greater appreciation for the United States. I admit that I'm not really into local history or history of the United States at all. For shame, I know. But reading this, I was like, wow, so many cool celebrations and arboretums. Is that how you pronounce that? The places where they have the gardens, arboretum? Is it pronounced?
Something. I'm terrible with that. I butcher names and words regularly.
You
so.
Do? Oh, good. Yes. I don't feel so bad. The places where there's bushes and flowers and trees and stuff, and that you could go see them.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
But I was fascinated by all these and the statues, and I was just blown away about some of the things in Pennsylvania, and that you said that it is eastern Pennsylvania, which is the other side of the state for me, but that's where I went to college, actually. I went to college in Phoenixville, which makes an appearance in your book. But it was interesting that you said that eastern Pennsylvania is purported by some to be the most haunted region of the country.
Mm.
Now, why do you think that is?
Now, I heard that. I had first heard that when, you remember M. Night Shyamalan's movie, The Sixth
Yes.
Sense? Remember that movie? Okay.
He makes all his movies out near Philly because that's where he lives.
Yes, and that's when I heard about, like, that's when I first heard that bandied about, that, like, that area of the country is the
yeah.
most haunted. One of the most haunted, we should say, because, like, I think New Orleans would have something to say about that.
Yeah, right.
As taking the actual crown.
Yeah.
And I've heard different things about what the different qualities of a place, and I'm going to put a little prologue, warning, whatever. I'm not a ghost hunter. I don't, you know, I don't do paranormal investigations. I do a lot of stuff just for fun, and that kind of thing. So, I mean, I'm pulling out this little list as like kind of a very amateur, you know, on a very amateur level. That qualities that make a place a haunted place is, one, it's located near water. And it could be that, you know, that water is a very, you know, emotional element, and it's always moving and fluid, and, you know, and that could be, you know, an element. That there is a history, especially when there is some violent history, could also lead to hauntings and that kind of thing. So, you know, some of the things that, you know, that I've mentioned in the book are definitely like in the realm of folklore. I would never like, I guess, like say it as a fact. That's one thing
I have to say.
And
I'm
going off
in your book. You said purported by some, but I was fascinated only because I hadn't heard that before. And I was like,
Whoa. But that's, just as a little tangent, that's something that I learned about after working with this, was that when it comes to when we talk about history, per se, it's relevant. It's, you know, I'm not saying that there is no real history, but we have so many layers and that it's like, you know, it's almost like you've lost the right story or what the real story. I'm convinced that in many places we're never going to find out. Or we might never find out. I should say never. Never say never.
Right.
But we might, never, exactly, find out what the real, you know, story behind a place is. But there's a lot of interesting things about Philly. I mean, one of the things that I learned that I was like, okay, well, that makes a lot of sense about, like, Philly being, like, a haunted place. All right, so have you ever traveled across the Betsy Ross Bridge to get to New Jersey or elsewhere?
Is that the bridge that you cross to get into is it Cherry Hill?
I'm not sure what section of Philly it is, but one of the choice bridges to get from Jersey back over to Philadelphia.
Yeah, I went just a couple times. Actually, I went to college to study to be a minister, if that's not funny. And one of our friends who was a visiting professor was actually a pastor in inner city New Jersey, and we would go over and visit him, but I can't remember what bridge it was. But anyway,
I mean,
there's
a
Betsy Ross Bridge.
Right. So the Betsy Ross Bridge, and this is one of the things I learned while writing the book, was that the foundation of the Betsy Ross Bridge is made at least partially with the rubble from Monument Cemetery after it was desanctified. So back in the Monument Cemetery was a big Victorian cemetery that I guess like in the 50s and 60s, no one had been buried there for a while. they did a, I guess like a, they put a call out like so people could claim their relatives. The ones who weren't claimed were buried in another cemetery, and all of those monuments were kind of hauled away and were made into the foundation of the bridge. And you can, on the shore, like near the bridge, there's still like rubble and pieces of tombstones.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
I'm
mean,
goosebumps.
Yeah, it's kind of it's insane. And I'm trying to think of the off the top of my head. And one of the things I would say to folks is take a look at if you've read and you're fascinated by things, on my website I put a page there's because. I had to kind of cut down on my bibliography that went into the print book, but I wanted the complete one to be accessible. So on my website is a, I guess like a, the full bibliography, and there's all like different and blogs and whatnot, and in the order of appearance in the that as it appears in the book. So there's a couple of really fascinating blog posts, and I believe the blog is The Cemetery Traveler. Don't hold me to that because I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's one of them. And he tells the whole story of Monument Cemetery and how, you know, what it was and, you know, how it came to be, you know, ruined and what happened to it afterwards. It's just an amazing, amazing story.
Wow.
I gave a little tidbit of it, but yeah, crazy, right?
It is crazy. I never heard of that. And, you know, that side of the state is kind of creepy feeling because I'm from southwestern Pennsylvania, and the other side of the state, Philly, is about a 5.5-hour drive. And it's like a totally different culture, too. I remember when I'd go into a pizza shop in college and I'd ask for a medium pop, how much is your medium pop? And he'd be like, what's pop? And they're like, And I said a medium pop, and I would just keep raising my voice. And the guy behind the counter, you know. And then finally there's this guy on the side, and he's chuckling. He says, she means soda, you know. And you wouldn't think there would be this much, diversity in just Pennsylvania. You'd think we'd all use the same words and talk. I remember going to the deli, you know. I'd like to have a half a pound of brick cheese. What's brick cheese? I'm like, what do you mean, what's brick cheese? You know, it's like explaining what's Swiss, you know. It's like, it's brick cheese. And it was like, oh, so finally I just said, okay, just Munster, close enough. But I remember being in college, and, boy, there were some creepy roads there in Phoenixville. I remember one, it was called, I think, Seven Stars Road, and there was, like, all these rumors about, like, this cult that was on this road. And so, of course, us fundamental Pentecostal Christians would drive down thinking we can cast out demons and all kind of crazy stuff. And such an idiot I was, but but I remember feeling in the Phoenixville area and the eastern side of the, oh, I just had goosebumps. It felt so heavy with the spiritual realm, you know. Not that, you know, southwestern PA isn't, but boy, maybe because of the richness of history. And isn't Gettysburg not too awfully far from Philly, or is Gettysburg more central?
It's more south. I'm geography and mine,
yeah,
is very bad.
And I'm asking a New Jersey girl. Where the hell is Gettysburg anyway?
I'm thinking from me, Gettysburg is probably about 2.5 hours south of me. And Philly is about an hour south of me, hour and 15. So, yeah, Gettysburg is a little bit further down, closer to Maryland.
Oh, but it's still more on the eastern side than the western.
Yeah, yeah.
And another cool thing about your book, besides like all these, I mean, it is literally filled with hundreds and hundreds of tidbits on celebrations and holidays and how people decorate and their cemeteries and their churches. And I was surprised that St. Anthony's Chapel in Pittsburgh has the largest gathering of Catholic relics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have, this was, it's funny,
Pittsburgh.
I'm just going to back, oh, sorry, yeah, I'm just going to backtrack for a second when you were like, you know,
oh,
it was
sure.
Just, when you were saying, because I was thinking, as you were saying it, I was thinking, mission accomplished, because, and I'm paraphrasing you too, that it was like, it was so fascinating to learn about the country, like, as, you know, and I mean, this is only a small segment of it, and that was the reason. Yeah, I mean, but that was the reason for this whole entire project was to kind of give people an idea. I think a lot of folks, when they think of like magical or spiritual spaces, that not that, that we don't have them, but it's like, you know, when you're thinking of like a sacred site, people think of Stonehenge or think of, you know, think of things like that, like places away from here, places in the old country, places in Europe.
Yeah.
We have everything here. We really do.
I'm realizing that. I mean, you talk about, you know, the pyramids that are in the different graveyards and the different connections with a lot of the architecture and the buildings. And I loved it that you pointed out the Cathedral of Learning at Pitt. That is such a gorgeous building, you know. And I'm just fascinated. See, I don't like history. And yet I'm sucked in. You are such a good writer. You make
thank you.
Things easy. Do you have a historical background, like a degree in history or anything, or teaching?
I was a I was an English major, I did teach high school for a few years before I stayed
there
home with my kids.
Okay.
But I also and I also studied art history. So you know what I think. History, and I got to tell you, I mean, like when I was younger, history to me was dull as ditch water. I really didn't like it. But I found that what made me like it, what made me love it, was like the minutia and the day-to-day kind of little factoids. I find that absolutely fascinating, like how people lived, day-to-day stuff, their day-to-day routines, actual foods that they ate. I mean, that kind of thing. And I think that history really can be a pleasurable thing. I've taken to listening to audiobooks of historians that I really think kind of make history read like almost like a fictional novel. And you know, and that just brings it alive. And I was, it thrilled me that like that I potentially might have done the same thing.
You did.
Okay, awesome.
You absolutely did, because I've homeschooled my son ever since he was little, and he's in his senior year. And I've always, you know, not liked history because I, like you said, dolls ditch water. I'm totally stealing that phrase. It's exactly right. And we get some great courses. Have you ever heard the Great Courses, the DVD series that you can get from the teaching company? Have you ever heard of them?
No, I haven't. When it comes
to
homeschooling,
I've
dealt
with
Khan Academy. Oh, okay.
TheGreatCourses.com. You can get them in audio or DVD or streaming. And they literally get professors from all over the country in different specialties. And they have video lectures, 30 minutes to 40 minutes long, of the best professors in the country on a variety of subjects, history and religion, and they really get into the nitty-gritty, literature and science and physics and it's geology. And I never thought I liked history either, and then I got some of these great courses, and I would hear my son watching it in the background. I'm like, that's totally fascinating. Like there was this one on from the Smithsonian. They were in partnership with the Great Courses talking about American history. And I would just wander in there and just sit down and with my mouth open, I'm like, this is so awesome. And they'd bring in relics from the Smithsonian and talk about the history of it. And so I get this feeling when I read your book, and I'm totally going to give this to my son to look at, because there are so many tidbits. And another cool thing I love about your book is that you actually put like a physical address and website and sometimes even contact information for a lot of these museums and churches and gatherings and groups and parks. You put them in there so people can, you know, research it for themselves or contact for more information. So you hit the ball out of the park with this. Every time I pick it up and I'm like, wow, and I just, you know, turn it to any page and I start reading and I get immersed. And sometimes I leave my food on the counter, you know, I was going to eat them, and my husband's like, your food's getting cold. I was like, oh, okay, I'll be right there. But if you are that good of a writer, I thought perhaps you had a teaching background, because usually one teacher can recognize another teacher, especially a good teacher, because you make it interesting. So
thank you.
We're already running out of time. I can't believe this. So I want to thank you for joining us. But people, if you're interested in energy and the magic of place and flowers and herbs and symbols, and state flowers, and museums, and hauntings, and ghosts, and legends, you really need to pick up Natalie Zaman's new book, Magical Destinations of the Northeast, Sacred Sites, Occult Oddities, and Magical Moments, published by Llewellyn Books, and available anywhere the books are sold. So online or in person, ask for it if you don't see it. It is, and it's a big book, too. I mean, this isn't just like a little book. It's over 440 pages. And she has a bibliography, but like she says on her website, she even has a more extensive bibliography to fill in the blanks. So thank you so much, Natalie, for taking time out of your busy schedule and your book tour to speak with me on the Athena Zone.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Oh, you're most welcome, and best wishes for tons of sales on your new book.
Oh, thanks. You have a great day.
Oh, thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thanks,
bye.
Everyone, for listening. We'll join you Thursday on the Athena Zone with the Psychic Twins. Bye-bye.